Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Week in Reviews. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. Without doubt, every filmmaker wants to score an Oscar. It is the ultimate accolade. This year, a first-time director may indeed realize his dreams. Nominated for Best Foreign Language Film is Bullhead. The writer and director of this very compelling and very dark look into the human condition is Michael Roskam. We're hoping to have Michael with us directly, but we also have some other guests. Joining us are Tim League of Alamo Drafthouse, who are the U.S. distributors, and some might say big reasons why Bullhead is an Oscar nominee. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
And also joining us is Charlie Boswell. Now, one might wonder what an AMD, AMD as in chip maker, is doing on a program about movies. Well, Charlie Boswell is AMD's point man when it comes to movies. Charlie, it is always great to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited.
You're excited. Oh, my word.
It's great to be with you again. Always enjoy your shows.
Tim, I'm going to pick on you first.
Okay.
Don't feel bad. I pick on all of my guests, fairly. Everyone gets a turn in the ringer. Alamo is fairly well known as a theater chain that likes to give people options that the larger chains and the megaplexes do not. Tell us a little bit about Alamo.
Well, it started off as a mom-and-pop single-screen theater almost 15 years ago. It's actually going to be 15 years ago next week as when we opened up our first operation here in Austin. And over the years, we've grown. But as we've grown, we've tried to stay true to those mom-and-pop roots and true to some of the principles that got us into the business in the first place. My wife and I are longtime diehard movie fans, and what we wanted to open up was the movie theater for movie fans, by movie fans for movie fans.
Yeah, I mean, you don't seem to feature the normal run of the mill stuff.
Well, we will occasionally. There's a lot of money in that Harry Potter, and we'll still play that. But that's not really where our passion is. We like to find movies through the festival circuit, through our own festival that we produce in the fall, and champion the movies that we love too. And that's one of the things that has been great about the growth of the company is that with the more Alamo Drafthouse movie theaters there are, the better a base we have to support independent films like Bullhead.
Okay, let's talk about the comment you just made. The film festival in the fall. Tell us a little bit about Fantastic Fest.
Well, sure. It's now become, we're going into our eighth year, and it's now become the largest genre film festival in the United States. And by genre, I mean horror, science fiction, fantasy, And then we delve into crime and just all around sort of odd, weird movies from all over the globe. We have 75 features, 50 shorts, and of those, about 70% of those are going to be foreign language films. And at the heart of Fantastic Fest is something called the AMD Next Wave Award, and that's where Charlie kind of factors into the equation here. 5 years ago, over a couple of beers, Charlie and I concocted an idea to bring to the festival first-time genre feature directors, show them Austin, show them a great time, but also showcase emerging new talent, emerging new directors. And this year, it was Michael Roskam from Bullhead who took the top prize, best director, best film, and best actor in that AMD Next Wave category. And that's what kicked off the wave of publicity that ultimately ended us up at the Oscars with the film.
Charlie, you're to blame for all of this?
Yeah, I'll take the blame for doing something right anytime. But I have a co-conspirator, Tim League, and it's, you know, being involved in technology that, you know, is used in, you know, the typical, you know, giant robot special effects bonanzas, you know, that's one angle. But really, to answer your question, what am I here? Why am I excited about what Tim is doing and the Next Wave and all these new voices is that, you know, as I've said on your show many times before, is, you know, I think the most important computer is the one that sits on your shoulders. And I always bring technology into that, into this discussion, only respecting the most important computer, the human mind. And the interesting thing about Mikhail, this director, is he is first an oil painter. And so my excitement about this is being able to at least speak to my company's commitment to delivering the highest visual fidelity in the world to a number of different playback devices. But working with Tim and working with these young filmmakers, you cannot help but get excited about the sort of the fresh look, you know, outside of the Hollywood formulaic approach to, you know, to making movies. And you'll find out when you see this movie just how beautiful it is, how beautiful it's shot, and how cohesive the story is. And it, like you said, when you open the show, it is a dark, you know, a look into sort of a, you know, a dark side of the human condition. And so anyway, here we are, and as Tim said, it all started over a beer, which is probably not a bad way to start everything.
I'm in perfect agreement. Tim, it wasn't until earlier this afternoon that I was told that Michael Roskam, or Mikhail, excuse my mispronunciation there, was a painter. I believe that he has a master's in fine arts. Suddenly, the movie takes on a whole different direction, particularly the beginning section, the first maybe 10-15 minutes. It really does look like, you know, oil canvases, dark and foreboding. Is that the impression you have as well?
It was relatively recent news to me as well. When we were with the film in Palm Springs, we took that opportunity because Mikhail was in the States to record the DVD commentary track. So I had the pleasure of sitting with him and, you know, prodding him with questions every once in a while, but mostly just letting him wax poetic about the film. And so that's where I got the backstory of his first career, which was as a painter, and also how it impacts his work and various different shots. So I mean, he's very respectful towards the Dutch masters who were masters of light and shadow. And once you know it and you watch the film again, you can see just how controlled he is in setting up his compositions and his lighting. And the film is staggeringly beautiful for a first-time feature director, and I think it's because he has that other side to him that he had before he got into filmmaking.
Yeah, that's another aspect. I'm sure that he didn't have $100 million budget for this movie. He is compressed so much into every possible scene. There is nothing wasted. It's almost like you could use this movie as a teaching tool to the major studios, or at least, yeah, that's my opinion. Would you agree with that, Tim?
Yeah, I happen to know what the budget is. I'm not really supposed to say what it is, but you're correct. It is less than $100 million, and significantly less. And they were very lean and efficient in shooting the film. The hardest part of getting a feature like this done is gathering the finances, and that took them almost 3 years through a variety of sources. If you look at the bottom of the poster, there's maybe about 12 logos. Each one of those represents a portion of the budget. And thankfully, it was a huge success in Belgium, won lots of awards, and those financiers got their money back. But I think the model in Europe is different than it is in the United States, that there's a lot more of these lower-budget films being made with arts grants money. And that's what this was. This was through both the Dutch-speaking and the French-speaking portions of Belgium, their government and various other government bodies, putting forth money that was for the arts. And so it's just a different process, and it creates a more lean production environment in some of these European countries.
Charlie, I have to ask you the question. Obviously, Bullhead isn't rich in special effects and all the rest of it. The areas that one would traditionally associate with computer usage, CGI, etc. But how can companies like AMD help independent filmmakers?
Well, that's really the question. And I think at the heart of it, companies like my company, AMD, we need to make sure that the director's vision, or really in any content creator's vision, when he creates that, that we need to make sure that when that's played back, that same fidelity, that same experience is carried all the way through the pipeline. In the case of Bullhead, it's a great example. It's a fantastic opportunity for my company because this is first and foremost an artist really delivering a visual, and with Tim on board, we begin to talk about breaking and exposing that artist to the populace and to the whether the film circuit or, in this case, the Academy Awards, the Academy of Motion Pictures. So there's an exposure. So it's almost it's the actual beginning of a cloud story where, involved in the creation and now the distribution and ultimately trying to guarantee the op playback experience. And that's where our graphics, if you will, our APU comes into play. And so it's a bigger story than we've ever told because it's now from creation to cloud distribution to the consumption of that content, but through to that artist, that oil you know, the Dutch master's vision all the way through. And so we, it's an amazing opportunity for us, but it's also a very strong commitment to be able to make that. And we've been doing this now for the past 10, 11 years in Hollywood, and I'm so excited to be able to work now offshore with some of these new, fresh directors like Mikhail.
And Tim, your needs are slightly different. You have a chain of what? Almost a dozen theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously need to provide product to the theater. How do you do it these days? Is it digital, or you know, does someone turn up on your doorstep with big old reels of 35mm film?
We do a little of both, but we have converted all of our facilities to 4K digital. And we took our time getting to this transition, but once the 4K resolution came out is when we pulled the trigger, and then we converted everything at that time. I you know, have been keeping an eye on what's been happening with the digital revolution in exhibition and didn't want to commit until we had something that met with our technical specifications. So, but once we found a solution, then we jumped and we were all in. Now, that said, people can still show up to the theater with giant reels of 35. We actually have a nonprofit film archive that we curate as part of the Alamo Drafthouse brand. We'll probably be one of the last theaters in the world that's still showing 35mm, because there's things that aren't ever going to be converted to digital. And we, as a, you know, at least in the United States, we have a problem with not properly archiving our past. So I'm still committed to 35mm for preservation and for rare screenings, but for new films, you can't touch the presentation of really properly done digital. I think that the future has arrived, and the future is digital.
I don't even need to ask this question, but I will. Charlie, would you agree? Digital is the way to go.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there is a certain aesthetic that people like to see with film, but you can do it digitally now, and you can do it all the way down the pipeline.
I have there's an anecdote I like to tell in this arena, where last year we showed a film that Martin Scorsese's foundation actually helped to do a 4K restoration on, which is the classic The Red Shoes. And there was one film critic that saw the screening. It was such a spectacular presentation. He wrote in his review, it's like, this is why digital will never replace 35mm. I've never seen, digital can never be presented as beautifully as the Technicolor print that we just watched. So I had to email him and give him the bad news that it was a 4K digital presentation, and he might have to rethink his whole theory on this. if it's done well, digital can be phenomenal.
Tim, just for the uninitiated, myself included, what is 4K?
It basically has to do with the pixel counts.
Right.
So if you're watching a standard Blu-ray, for example, you're looking at it, which is at 1080 pixels wide. So the standard for digital cinema exhibition was basically 2,000 pixels wide, which would be the 2K. And then there was a movement shortly after that quote-unquote standard was adopted to say that's not good enough, and that's when the 4,000 pixel resolution came about. And so it's basically 4x the resolution of a standard DVD, and it's measured by pixels wide.
Hmm. And you know what? If you want to blame someone, I think you can blame Charlie. It's these computer guys that keep changing the rules of engagement.
Well, yeah.
For the best.
Again, we'll take the blame for doing something right anytime. Again, and you know, it's a matter of delivering, you know, the highest resolution we can in the most practical way. And making that available to everybody, not just the big budget Hollywood guys, but the young filmmakers, you know, are now working at a level that is, and I'll let Tim speak to this, that is certainly with the tools that's exhibition ready, you know, without a lot of expense, and that's a good story for, you know, cultivating fresh voices without, you know, forcing them to go mortgage their house if they have one.
Tim, let's go back to Bullhead for a moment. How did this movie hit your radar? And you know, you're in Austin, and Mikhail's in Brussels. You know, how on earth did you even hear about this movie?
Well, it's partially because I program the Fantastic Fest in the fall. And so beginning and right around now, I start to hunt for looking all over the globe for movies. In the case of Bullhead, the movie had premiered at the Berlin Film Festival and got good reviews. And then I picked it up. I saw it at the Cannes Film Festival. So it was in May. I saw it, and I fell head over heels in love with it. And so my first move was to invite it to Fantastic Fest. And it actually took a little doing because the sales agent was positioning this as a traditional art house film. And Fantastic Fest has got a little bit of crazy in it. It's it's action, horror, science fiction, fantasy. But that sounds like it's sort of lowbrow film. But what our particular take on it is, we love exceptional storytelling. And if that storytelling happens to get a little bit dark in the corners, a little bit angry or violent in any way, shape, or form, then that's perfect. That's our bread and butter. And so although Bullhead wasn't technically a genre film, it's got, you know, punctuation marks of violence, and it's a dark subject matter. And we thought our audience would really respond, and they did.
Oh, it's certainly dark. and you're right. It's not a genre movie. But it's just a magic movie.
You could make a case that it's got a little bit of Frankenstein in it, in its own strange way. You know, he's sort of damaged goods. I think there's a lot of parallels to the Frankenstein monster in the character of Jackie in Bullhead. He's probably smarter than Frankenstein, but he is a bit of a monster.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, actually, what attracted me to Bullhead was the whole subject of hormones and steroids. It's a very hot topic here in the U.S., and unfortunately, way too many of them are allowed in our food today. One of the questions that I really wanted to ask Mikhail was, you know, is it so big a problem in Europe? Tim, maybe you might be able to answer that.
I think I have a bit of an answer for it. I mean, for one, the subject of the film is it's based on a true story. There were mafia relationships within the meat processing industry in Belgium, and there was a federal investigator that was killed by one of the mafia members who was controlling the hormone cattle trade in Belgium. So it's all that aspect of the story is based on real life events. And I think because of the regulations that were imposed because of the European Union standardization, that they were actually quite strict about hormone usage in the cattle industry. And what the mafia did was basically covertly introduce it and pay off officials such that their beef that they got to be more efficient was able to be sold and not detected. So I think, it was a very famous case in Belgium when this federal inspector was killed, and it brought to light this deep underbelly of the hormone mafia.
I've got to admit, when I hear it put like that, you go, huh? Like, unfortunately, it's all too real. Farmers do use techniques on occasions that get them crops quicker. But what are your future plans for Bullhead? Yeah, do you see it opening into a wider market?
It does open to a wider market this Friday. We started out in New York, LA, and Austin, and we're actually opening an additional 20 engagements on Friday. So it's starting to spread. We've got a lot of interest from secondary markets and smaller towns. So our eyes are glued to the Oscars, because that would change everything. It's a big difference between being an Oscar-nominated film and an Oscar winner. I'm honored to be either. However, the demand will go up significantly if we do, in fact, take down the Oscar on Sunday.
Oh, I don't doubt that. And, Charlie, a grossly unfair question. Do you think Bullhead can pull it off?
Well, maybe I can answer that by telling you why I was so taken by this film. One, as you said, the visuals at the beginning of the film, it looked a lot like an oil painting. It was shot a lot like a Kubrick film, actually. Just amazing developing visuals. But the thing that really so you bring this amazing talent, Mikhail Roskam, into the picture, but you match that talent with Matthias Schoenaerts, the actor who plays Jackie. I think his performance is absolutely so believable, and so you identify with him, the way it's structured. I believe it can pull. I don't want to jinx it, but I believe it's definitely. It showed up on the radar of the Academy, and I think it has every element of the goods to take down the prize.
Well, I sincerely hope it can. I have to admit that, foreign language movies are always a challenge. Most moviegoers are lazy. They want to be entertained, they don't want to have to work. And, reading the subtitles, well, that constitutes work. But I really feel that this is a movie that, has got the goods. Would you concur?
Absolutely. I watch a lot of movies, and in my business of special effects, I see a lot of stuff, and some of them are well made and amazing and whatnot. But this was so refreshing to me to actually see a cogent story that was believable, that was powerful, and it was so visually stunning that it just blew me away. And not just because it was at Fantastic Fest, it truly stood out. you know, amongst all of the, you know, some of the circus around, you know, the Hollywood and the effects industry and whatnot. And all that stuff has its place. This film is very unique in that it tells an interesting story, but the way it develops and the way it ends is just you know it's very European, you know, in its approach, and I just think it's a standout. It's a great director, great actor, great story, great visual look. I just, you know, I think I'm very proud to go out there this weekend and to be a part of that with Tim. And I credit Tim for really, you know, bringing AMD into this thing. And, but it's so fulfilling to me to actually see this contest now after 5 years, each one of these winners has gone on now to a feature film. And now Mikhail, first time director, first feature, you know, gets on the court. It's just amazing.
Right. And by the way, I just had a message that Mikhail should be with us directly.
Better late than never.
Yeah.
Hopefully I answered those questions correctly on his behalf.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. We got plenty more if he does turn up. So, Tim, how did the AMD Next Wave Award come about? You made a bit of a joke that you and Charlie came up with the idea over a beer, but generally speaking, it takes a little bit more than that for something concrete to arrive. Yeah, I've got questions. Yeah, who selects the movies? Who votes on them? You know, who selects the winner? You tell me.
Sure. Well, first, I've had a relationship with Charlie before, and just being in the film industry in Austin, AMD did a lot in this town, let alone, you know, across the country and across the globe, to support the arts and to support filmmaking, you know, and so we had a working relationship, and we're trying to find ways that would serve both the overall mission of AMD and add a great component to the festival, and that's how it was hatched. And the first year,
by the way, what type of beer were you drinking?
Let's say for the record, it was Scheinerbach. Official beer,
okay,
of Fantastic Fest. Yeah, I probably was anyway, but
it was on brand. Yes.
But I do the selection and the curation of the films. I have since year one, and I continue to do that for the next wave. And I'm always looking out for, in particular, these first time filmmakers and emerging talent. It's been fascinating over the years, because a lot of cultures that don't have as strong of a filmmaking culture are starting to produce really great talent. There was a movie that we're quite fond of that we debuted this director's first film at Fantastic Fest, and then this year he sold a second feature to Sony as a big action film, and it's going to be a big wide release. But he's from Indonesia. There's people that are making movies. We had a first-time director this year at Next Wave from Colombia. We had a horror filmmaker that directed the first horror movie from Cuba. So it's interesting culture mixed with filmmaking that you don't see very often.
I hate to interrupt you, but I do believe that we have Mikhail with us. Mikhail,
hello.
Welcome.
Hi. Yes, I apologize.
Hello.
I was going, yeah. There are some parts of my brain that doesn't really connect anymore with timetables.
Oh, that is fine.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it life is great. It's wonderful to talk to you. And I have to ask you a question that I know you've been asked at least a million times. How do you feel about being nominated for an Oscar? But I know I shouldn't ask you, but I'm going to ask you. How does it feel?
Well, it's the weird thing about this nomination, of being nominated, is when we were shortlisted and I was trying to imagine it, that I actually could feel the excitement, like in a sort of imaginary mode, and I feel with the people. And actually, I met someone today that was nominated in another category, and I was like, wow, man, that's amazing, you know, that's great. And I suddenly realized that everything in my my thoughts and imagining it, I felt the excitement much clearer than when it actually happens. Because then it's so out of its league. I don't know, it's so big that you kind of, I don't know, I think my brain has to construct the emotions that you have to feel when it happens. That's still busy doing it. And I think it's going to be more remarkable and maybe exciting, maybe after the Oscars, I don't know, or like in a... Now, of course, I'm consciously aware of it, and I'm very proud, and I feel like, whoa. But I don't know, maybe it's too big. Maybe it's weird. It's more, I don't know. But I'm very excited, of course. But it's like,
oh, okay.
Wait, when it happens, you're kind of waiting for this emotion to come, and it, of like something, I don't know, chemical, or like falling in love or something. And it's just happening, and you're like, what's wrong? I need to be like feeling something. And it's so exciting, maybe, that it's overexciting, that you have to get used to the idea and feel the whole excitement later on. I don't know. But it is there, of course. I'm just trying to describe it in a way.
I noticed with great interest that your first love was painting, and I believe you received a master's degree in fine art in 1997. And I didn't know this until earlier this afternoon. And it suddenly, I looked at Bullhead with a whole different viewpoint. The early part of the movie, it is like a series of rather dark oil paintings. Was that your intention?
Yeah, it was consciously and probably also unconsciously that I couldn't do it differently. The whole... I mean, painting is not only one of my first love as an adolescent, because I come from graphic novels actually as a teenager, and I just love the tradition, the art of it, and the way many great classic oil like paintings could evoke a world, a universe, a story, a message, a concept. And I learned a lot, not only in just in pictures, and you know, in the way it plays with color or light and shadow and composition, but also what can one frame tell you, and also I always loved the aesthetics of a beautiful painting, and there are like many filmmakers who actually do the same thing, and many. Directors of photography refer to paintings rather than to photographers, because they're photographers themselves. And there is something about, painting. I don't know what it is, but it inspired me a lot to use it, to refer to it, because it's, you know, the history of the cultural history of us goes way beyond the origin of photography, you know. Movies started to exist when the pictures started to move, and they were based upon photography, but photography is just a moment in our time, and before that there were paintings and drawings, and I like to refer and being inspired by all of them, and not just by the, you know, the chemicals of photography or the lights of it.
I have to admit that I love classic pieces of art. You can take a great painting, and you can derive hours of pleasure just by looking at it. You know, it tells a story. The light, the background, and that very much was, you know, the way I view your cinematography. You could take Bullhead apart, scene by scene, and almost every single one of them is a moment in time, a glorious, luxurious adventure into color.
Yes, wow. I mean, I'm almost like, yeah, I'm speechless. It's wonderful to hear that, and to hear, yeah, that it has its effect and on that level. And we worked very hard at it. For me, every frame, every shot needs to be perfect. It needs the three things: it's light and shadow, the composition, and then the movement of the camera, which actually makes the composition move as well, and the light. So all those things are, yeah, I discuss them very intensely with my director of photography, and then we just try to make it happen, and yeah, it's so much fun making those shots. Yeah, and then, yeah, I'm very impressed by and honored by the way you described it.
The main character in the movie is portrayed by Matthias, and I'm sure I will get his last name wrong, Schoenaerts.
Yes, it's very well. That's, that's the way it's
I knew I would murder it.
It's Schoenaerts. But I do believe it's better to say Schoenaerts.
And I have to say that he does a very, very fine job. The news reports that I have read are saying that he packed on something like 60 pounds or 25 kilos of muscle to play the part. How did he do it, and how long did that take?
He started, like, when I asked him to play the role in 2005, he kind of started to prepare himself mentally to go on a journey that would lead him into becoming a heavier and bigger person. So I think he started, like, a couple of years before, like 3 years or something, to gain slowly weight and to train and to develop a platform, a physical platform, where he gained, like, I think 20 pounds in total. So, which is okay. He started to see it, that he was more, like, a little bit more stronger looking and so on. So, and then he just waited and kept himself focused up till the moment that we knew that we financed the movie and that we could start shooting it. So we took another, like, a year, where he then gained the other 40 pounds, which was eating, sleeping, and pumping iron. And that's what he did. And so it proves that he's not only, like, a wonderful actor when he is playing, it also proves that he is a man who is dedicated to what he does and what he wants to contribute to and to create. And he did it like only the biggest can do. It's the strong physical and psychological, powers almost to stay there and to do it and to keep going for it and believing in it. So that was wonderful to see that happening so close, that to be witnessing this great evolution that would lead to this performance.
Mikhail, also on the line, we have Charlie Boswell of AMD and Tim from Alamo Draft House. I have to ask you, Charlie. You spend a great deal of time working with filmmakers. Could you imagine getting involved in a project where, well, we're going to shoot this, but it'll take 3 years. We've got to bulk the actor up.
Yeah, it's quite a commitment. And you know, before Mikhail joined us, I thought that, you know, with Mikhail's visual style and the beauty of that camera work and that composition, matched with that level of performance, it's one of these moments in time where you know, things just happen. You know, it's amazing to me to see both of these guys get together and this thing happen. Because you know, the acting matching the level of excellence in this filmmaking is just, it's just really, really cool. You know, it doesn't happen. In fact, it doesn't happen very often at all, and that's why this movie is such a standout, excellent piece of work. That commitment to creating the frames and the artistic composition, and then to find this level of actor. I'm just curious, Mikhail, how did you guys get together?
We saw each other. Well, we met while I was looking for him for playing in one of my shorts that I did in 2005 called The One Thing to Do. And I met him there while I was doing an audition, and some guys within the film, you know, industry, like not really the industry, but without in the milieu, as you said, within the, you know, in the theater world and the movie world, he was known to be this up and young and upcoming actor who was also the son of the most legendary theater actor of Belgium. So he was there, and I wanted to see him because people were talking about him already, like, you have to go and see this guy. And he was perfect for that part as well that I wanted to do with. And yeah, that was it. When I saw him, I just knew this is one of the great guys. He has the DNA of the greatest. You just feel it. And then when we shot the short film, I presented to him, like, you know, I have this feature idea for a feature film, and I would like to share it with you, and would you like to be part of it? And that's what happened.
I will not give the plot of the movie away.
No, please not.
No. I mean, it is too cleverly done to have it, you know, exposed in print or on the air. But I am curious. I don't think I'll give much away by saying that it does involve the use of hormones and steroids, both in people and animals. Mm-hmm. And that's been a subject of great discussion here in the U.S. In fact, for about a year, I hosted a radio program which very much was about that topic. Is it a hot subject in Europe? Is that where you got the idea for the movie from?
Yeah, we had in the 90s, it was in the mid-90s, a veterinarian inspector of the Food and Drug Administration of Belgium was assassinated by this crime scene, by these, those beef traders, actually. And hormone traffic was the main thing, because it increased the income of the revenue, you know. And it was illegal. It has been illegal since many years, but nobody was doing anything about it until one guy, like an Elliot Ness kind of character, came up and said, "I'm going to do my job and be the inspector I need to be." And the guys, all these colleagues, were corrupted properly intimidated by it. So they would just let all things pass, and nothing was done about it. Then this guy was pretty stubborn, and he paid it with his life. That's the moment when the whole country woke up, realizing that a small part of our farmers were actually gangsters and messing around with our food. Now, the thing is, why is it illegal? It's a choice. It's a European thing, saying, like, you know, we don't think it's healthy, for it's good for your health, public health, so let's prohibit it. Then, on the other hand, here it is legal, and they say, like, 5 types of hormones are legal, so if you can use those 5, there is no organized crime around it, and you control it. It's just a matter of how you look at it. If some say you can't prove it, some would say, well, if you can't prove it, then it is no harm. Some say, like, maybe we should wait until we can prove it, there is no harm. And so it's just a perspective. But in the meantime, in here, you know what you're eating, which is not the case in Europe, because you're not really sure if your meat is clean, because it might be, there's no control of it. There's no inspection. There is no state control that says, like, these are the types. So what kind of, like, maybe poison is in the meat while it is supposed to be hormone-free? It's a discussion, and it will stay and remain a discussion. Me personally, I think that the controlled use of hormones, my personal opinion is, yeah, you can't, it's hard. I would say no hormones, but then they will use it, and then you have poison in it, or maybe crap in it, and I'd rather like to have hormones in it than know which ones.
Right. I think that's actually a very good answer. I very much feel the same way. I'll eat almost anything, but I do like to know what it is I'm eating.
Yes, absolutely. And on top, if you don't want to eat hormone meat, you can go and find hormone-free meat, because you will probably pay a bit more for it, but, you know, then it's at least you have the choice. And even we don't know if so, because, yeah, they're trying with organic meat to say, like, organic meat is absolutely without hormones. But I heard cases where even farmers, you know, biological farmers, not even aware of what's happening with their meat when they sell it, because the cows sometimes are picked up and put for a week somewhere else and gain another, I don't know, X amount of kilograms, and then getting sold as being biological meat, and nobody knows about it. So that's why it's mafia. So you don't know what's happening. Yeah.
I'm looking at the clock here, and we're just about out of time. Tim League, I want to thank you so much for taking part this afternoon, and I do hope that Alamo Draft House it keeps expanding, and you'll be happy to come back and talk to us another time.
Anytime, as long as you promise to send positive thoughts this Sunday for the Oscars.
Okay. All right. Tim, you started this, so we're going to have a quick vote. Who's going to win the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film? And I'll vote first. I'm going to say Bullhead.
I'm going to cast my vote. This is maybe a bit controversial, but for Bullhead.
Yes, but I would like to say that I'm going to vote for Bullhead.
All right.
Mikhail, it's you under the deciding vote.
I can't vote for myself. No.
Oh, Mikhail, you have to vote for yourself.
We've already got it 1-3-3-3 vote. It doesn't matter how you vote, Mikhail. So
yeah,
we've already got it 3-1.
I'm a democratic guy, so I will follow without being a sheep. I follow the majority, and I will say, boom.
Yeah.
So, to all our listeners, there you have it. Our absolute nonpartisan panel is voting 4-0 that Bullhead is going to be walking away with the Oscar.
Perfect. Oh, looking forward to that moment if that happens.
And Charlie, it's always delightful to talk to you. Are you going to be? Are you going to be in LA to? Take in
absolutely.
Oscars.
I leave on Saturday morning, and I'm very, very excited, very honored to be even remotely associated with Mikhail, and Tim League is an amazing colleague of mine. So I'm very, very excited, and yes, I will be there.
All right, looking forward to you guys.
And Mikhail, obviously, you are going to be at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Have you bought yourself a new suit?
Well, I'm very happy to say that in Belgium, many people are going like really out of their beautiful minds and just supporting us. And I also have a designer who offers me to wear a tuxedo designed by his hand, and I'm going to do that. Very proud.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's sometimes hard for us in the U.S. to understand, you know, what happens in Belgium or anywhere else. But I understand that the country has very much got behind Bullhead. You really are. Quite the star.
Yeah, actually, in the beginning, it was only Matthias who was the star, and I was just the director. But now that started to shift a little. Getting into a certain balance. No, it's not. I'm not doing it for that. But yeah, I cannot only. Yeah, now I can only, you know, see that we are actually Belgium is the whole country is very proud and supporting and. They just, in the beginning, it was like, you know, we think Bullhead's going to win, but now they're like saying we are going to win. Yeah, it became national property, the movie. It's not mine anymore. So it's actually the Belgians are going to win. They just really feel like that. And it's so, I mean, it's very sweet to see that happening. And very honor. I'm sorry, it's a big honor as well. It's charming.
Do you have a new project in the works, or is it too early for that?
No, it's not too early. I mean, I would love to say like I'm kind of behind schedule because of what's happening, but I'm happily to put that momentum a little bit later after everything has calmed down a little bit. I'm trying to I'm developing new projects, but it's a bit early to say what it is because. I'm still trying to find the right one. I mean, there's several projects, and it depends a little bit on how they will get developed and, of course, financed, which is always a very important issue.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any money. Otherwise, I'd finance you.
Oh, that's good. Well, the thought is already it's worth a lot. So that's support, and that's the psychological impact of it is pretty important. So I'll take that one already with me.
Okay. Mikhail, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been delightful, and you do absolutely have my best wishes for you Sunday.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Simon Barrett. for blogging his network, wishing everyone a happy and safe evening. And please do watch the Oscars on Sunday. And let's root for Mikhail. I think he's going to win. Till next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.